This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. As of 2022, the United States was the biggest oil producer on the planet. 20% of daily global production, according to the Department of Energy. It hasn't always been that way. And if you're looking for a moment when both the economics and the politics of the American energy industry changed, 50 years ago this fall is where you want to start. October 1973. In response to American support for Israel in the Yom Kippur War, Arab members of OPEC cut off their oil exports to the United States. And that hit hard, and right away, gas supplies cratered, prices shot up, and drivers lined up for blocks to fill their tanks. As Marketplace's Henry Epp reports, the government's response changed how this country uses and acquires its energy.
Amy Myers Jaffe remembers the gas lines.
There was one gasoline station in the little town that I grew up in. And so lines would form for that gasoline station at 5 a.m. because gasoline would literally run out.
Jaffe is an energy expert at New York University. To Americans in 1973, she says, the idea that there suddenly wasn't enough gas to go around was shocking.
The automobile was king. People were used to not only driving everywhere to the store, to work, and so forth, but there was also this sort of sense that of freedom and mobility.
In early November 1973, then-President Richard Nixon addressed the nation. He said the country would embark on a new course, centered around two concepts which at that point were brand new to most Americans. The first, energy conservation.
In the short run, this course means that we must use less energy. That means less heat, less electricity, less gasoline.
Nixon asked Americans to voluntarily turn down the thermostat, turn off lights, carpool, and use mass transit. His administration also required some changes, says Meg Jacobs, who teaches American history at Princeton.
He's the person who imposes a national speed limit, for example. Americans hate the speed limit. They hate it.
That loathed limit of 55 miles per hour stayed on the books until 1995. But another conservation measure stemming from Nixon's response has had a longer life: fuel efficiency standards for cars. Brian Black, a history and environmental studies professor at Penn State Altoona, says until the energy crisis, Americans didn't think about what kind of gas mileage their cars got. They were focused on other things.
The chrome, the type of stereo, whatever.
Black says efficiency standards gave drivers new choices.
And this is when we get into especially Japanese manufacturers coming into the marketplace and providing consumers with an option in size and efficiency, at least.
Still, the standards applied to each car maker's fleet, which left a loophole that let them market gas-guzzling SUVs. So the legacy of Nixon's call for energy conservation is mixed. But that was just one half of his plan. The other, also brand new to most Americans, energy independence.
In the long run, it means that we must develop new sources of energy, which will give us the capacity to meet our needs without relying on any foreign nation.
Nixon hoped to make the U.S. entirely energy independent by 1980. That didn't happen, but it did lead to more oil production in the U.S. Imports eventually peaked in 2005, and fracking and other technologies have recently made the U.S. the world's leading oil producer. Nixon's push also spurred research and development into wind, solar, and nuclear power, and electric vehicles. For a while, the U.S. was a leader in those areas. A few years after the embargo, President Jimmy Carter even put solar panels on the White House. Again, Brian Black of Penn State.
To Jimmy Carter and many other people, that was just a good idea.
But when oil prices dropped again in the 80s, that commitment to renewables didn't stick.
When Ronald Reagan became president, to him that was a symbol of weakness.
Reagan took down the White House solar panels, and the U.S. eventually ceded its advantage in renewables. Now, with the Inflation Reduction Act, we're trying to play catch-up, says Amy Myers Jaffe at NYU.
If we'd have stayed the course since 1973 to today and not had this volatility of commitment of policy and commitment of science dollars, we'd be in a much better place.
But some of those technologies are finally being used on a broader scale. Electric vehicles, for example. Jaffe drives one now.
When the gasoline price goes up, doesn't affect me.
And those 5 a.m. gas lines can stay a childhood memory. I'm Henry Epp for Marketplace.